to Pax Europiana, our debate about peace in Europe, and also about economic reform. That's the sections I'm now focusing. I've talked already about NATO, about the European Union, about the currency and the trading system, and about the tax system, the share of the GDP. And I have already mentioned that we should have lower taxes in Western Europe, especially in Italy, especially in Germany, especially in France. And that is really one of the biggest problem in the short term, which needs to be fixed and which needs to be addressed. Especially in Italy, the taxes are much too high, especially in France as well. But there is some improvement, but it should be 20% in France and Germany, 15% in Italy, and 15% in Austria as well. And also then 15% should be about the corporation tax level of the Central Europeans, 10 of the Southeastern Europeans and Eastern Europeans. Yeah. So that's about the principal introduction. And now I would like to talk about the issue of state ownership of companies. Because when you look at the European economic model, I call it the SME economic model. I made a separate podcast already. But we have one anomaly in Europe, and this is a relative or actually very high level of state-owned companies. I mean companies which are owned either by the national government or by the regional government or by municipalities on all different levels. What are they doing? They're doing often infrastructure services like rail companies, energy companies, other public services like waste collections, water systems, and this kind of companies. But often it's also mining companies, banking companies, and so on and so on, and all different levels of factors. And I'm not completely against the state-owned companies. In some areas, it might be very useful. There might be a lack of capital in for a startup, for a ski lift, for example. Or in transition companies, obviously highways have to be built by the state. Yeah, there's also many many forms where, for example, it's better to have a state company than having it managed by the state itself. But in principle, we have much too high, much too many of these state companies in areas where in a fully working market economy, this is no longer justified, and it's also not a very efficient system, and it leads to a lot of problems which I would call collusion, corruption, state capture, meaning how this is working in reality is that the prime minister of a EU member state is also a corporate tycoon. Meaning like this, you are not only the prime minister of Austria, Bulgaria, France, you are also the manager of a huge, vast network of the economy directly, where you decide who is the manager. Obviously, there's a board in between. There's now, we are no longer in the 70s. Obviously, there's corporate governance, there's capital market obligations. Many of them are partially floated on the capital market. So you have to do that all more sophisticated. But in many, when it boils down to the facts, yeah, it's about the prime minister and his network deciding who should be the most important industrial managers, mainly, of course, also in the railway industry, but often also partially in the automotive industry, also partially in the banking industry. And your influence is vast, and also then the temptations for collusions and for corruption. I don't say that everybody is corrupt. No, I'm not so simplistic. I don't say that the system is corrupt. Yes, that I say partly yes. Yeah, and I say that obviously then when you then need something, for example, you have an election campaign to finance, or you need your ex-minister to have a nice position somewhere, you always find some place for anybody, and also for the children of some ex-ministers or for somebody you need to organize. You have a vast patronage network because you own all this vast network of companies directly. While in some areas it might be useful and justified to have public ownership, I will discuss about it, in this extent which we have it in Europe, it's certainly not justified. Clearly, you know, we have state ownership everywhere in the world, these companies which are owned by the states. I'm not in principle against that. Yeah, it might be justified for a certain purpose, for a certain time, for a certain vehicle to have it. I give you a good example. For example, in Austria, before the imperial castle, the Vienna castle of the Schönburg of the Habsburg family, it was nationalized from the Habsburg to the state. It was managed by the state, by the ministry directly, very badly for many decades. And then there was a specific company managed, set up to own this castle and to manage it towards the tourist community. And it has turned out very beneficial because so they raised their entry fee, they managed it better. It became a own commercial entity and it has turned out to be an international tourism magnet, for example. So it can be very useful to have state-owned companies to do specific services for the public, but as a better managed entity, for example. I agree on that. Yeah? I'm not for privatization of Schönbrunn Castle. No. But I think that we should not have all energy companies nationalized. Or when we have already, and most of them are now partly stock exchange listed, why not reduce the share of the state, not having 51% like we have it in Austria on some companies, or the French have huge energy holdings, while they have also huge state debts. And now in the corona crisis, it's really time to reconsider if we should not really start a major wave of privatization in Europe in order to reduce this newly issued debt. And that's what I'm really very much in favor for. Of course, not all companies might be eligible for that. I agree, there might be, for example, for railway infrastructure or for highway operations. And there is also options here. I call also for the option to have unified European infrastructure companies. For example, if Austria or Slovenia, they have rather small railway companies in the European context, anyhow, this makes a lot of sense to have European dimension of infrastructure planning. The Austrian state can share or can send its ownership of the infrastructure company of railway to the European Investment Bank and sell it basically in an inner state relation because it makes sense to have a European-wide infrastructure public company and maybe later it might be floated. I'm for that. Yeah, that's a very good idea. In railways, in energies, in ports, let's have it Europeanized. It's always much better than to sell it to the Chinese or to sell it to the Russians, yeah, like in Piraeus. Yeah? Because on the European level, we have this capacity to raise enough funding and we can, for example, trade it from the European level, from the national level, which is less competent, or less able to manage it well, or less able to raise the funding to develop ports and expensive infrastructure, then the state-owned companies can be traded in to the European Investment Bank, and then the states, which have so much debts now, they can be refinanced and reduce their debt level. That's all very good. But what we don't need is this level of huge ownership of our industrial companies. I don't think so. If you look, for example, around in Europe a bit, yeah, in France, it's quite astonishing what the French state holding owns, from Renault to Airbus, yeah, to all this defense sector company, the banking sector, the EDF. Yeah. These are huge European giants, yeah, or also the SNCF, the railway company. I mean, the French state is a huge corporate mammoth. It's quite amazing. Also, but okay, you can say it works quite well. Yeah, it's maybe true, but how good would it work if it would be all privatized and it would be at least reduce the state equity and ownership in these companies? And maybe there would be also more competition. There would be less collusion. There would be less corruption. Also, that has to be seen. Then let's go to Italy. Italy and Austria are quite similar countries from the historic context. and they both have this huge leftover from World War II and post-World War II economic restructuring, where it was necessary to nationalize some of these assets. There's a bit of a different history in both countries, but the truth is they only privatized it when they were completely failing. So Alitalia and Austrian Airlines, there are many scandals attached on that one, and it was very expensive. Yeah. But there is this kind of huge leftover of a state corporate sector in Austria and in Italy. Whenever we were never communist countries, and we were this kind of mixed economies under heavy pressure from Soviet ideology and trying to somehow stabilize in the post-war reconstruction period with huge state sectors, which only gradually have a little bit improved in the 90s and in the early 2000s. But recently it's no longer en vogue to privatize anything, because the political elites have understood they can do some jingoistic, nationalistic kind of rhetoric about this is ours, we don't sell it, it belongs to the core of the industrial area. And then they can put their friends in the boards and they can ensure that there is this kind of inner corporate sector collusion network, which is extremely helpful when you need then some party financing, when you need a job for yourself. Not everybody can work later for a Russian company and like Schröder, but it's also very good if you make some friends with your own companies while you are the prime minister or the minister, because wonderfully after half a year, maybe the public won't watch a lot, and then you find yourself as the CFO of a wonderful, even much better position in an energy company or in an industrial asset, which is partly owned by the state, and you were the owner for some years as a minister or prime minister or the owner representative. But you behaved like the owner, you built the network, you installed maybe some manager there who then thinks, it would be really good to have the political backing, and I get my ex-boss then with a nice consulting contract, or with a nice board membership in some subsidiary, or somehow like this. So it all works beautifully for the selected few on the cost of the many. And this is how it works. It's called jobs for the boys in America. And that's exactly one of our most important problem we have in Europe. So I'm not a radical saying everything must be private. You know, I admire obviously Margaret Thatcher for what she did. And she really released this economic potential in the framework of the European internal market. She has brought the United Kingdom from a complete bankruptcy in 76. I talked often about that already. And towards her, when she came to power in 79, she had this dynamic of privatization releasing the wealth potential. And she really transformed the economy so well that the British no longer need the European Union, at least to think like that, because they turned out to be so successful with this new kind of economy which they built. And I know you always then can criticize something, and even they do some criticism, and now they have, of course, there's a backlash after some time, because you can do privatization good or bad. It's also true. You can do a very decent form of privatization where there is good sales price, there is a good structure for that market and specifically, and it was a good design project. Or you can sell privatization, a state asset, in a dodgy way to some kind of corrupt elite participant, best to your friend, very much below the market level. And you can also design it very badly that it's later not working. And then obviously this all gets a bad name. So privatization, like everything in the world, and needs to be done decently according to decent capital market rules, and also transparently and not corrupt. And also when it's a regulated business, like for example railway, the competitive situation and the market conditions later after for the private operator must also be designed reasonably well in the benefit of the welfare of the public, and also for the operator to be reasonable. So we cannot just privatize it all and no, don't care for the rest. Yeah? No, obviously infrastructure business and many others of these regulated businesses, and every business is regulated, but I talk about gambling or energy. These are highly sensitive energy state. These are highly sensitive industrial sectors, obviously, of strategic value, like logistics, energy, defense. So it must be done in a decent way, obviously. It must be well thought through, and there is many good examples for that. But obviously, recently, there is a combination of the left, which never liked the privatization for clear reasons, and the populist right, which doesn't like it for this kind of nationalistic and corruption reason, and also the center recently, so it's less popular. And they also see that the state, not the state itself, but the elite in power, when you are very lucky and you manage to fall upwards into this kind of position of a political leader, and then you are a prime minister, then you are quite powerless. You can regulate, yes, you can do some budget proposition, you have some powers, you also have the military, but we have no reason to use it in most European countries. So what do you do during the day? You can entertain, have some crisis, there are some accidents, there are some national disasters, some EU meetings. But if you lack this direct access to corporate control and boards, yeah, you are less of an interesting partner to speak to for most of your business elite. And also you cannot really hand out a lot of favors directly. You always have to ask others for jobs and for your friends, for your constituency. And that's very hard work. So it's much easier to have a big industrial company owned, and then you put your guys into that one. And so it works, unfortunately, from Romania to France. A little bit less in Germany. Because why? Because after Western Germany, I'm told already, built up by America after the Second World War, there was, of course, a much different kind of economic thinking as well established, with American help, and so there you don't see the same level of state ownership in Germany. But let's not be too optimistic, as we have seen, they had a lot of these Landesbanken. They were all totally megalomaniac and losing many, many hundreds of billions in the great financial crisis with their bad investments in America and elsewhere. So that was really a very bad example how you have this state-owned or state-guaranteed Landesbanken, because it's quite similar for a bank. If you own partly or you give it a full state guarantee, then they go on and do incompetently whatever they want, and then the taxpayers has to bail them out. Yeah? And also Germany in the energy sector, the lender, they have a lot of assets, yeah, and they made a lot of bad decisions with many mergers, acquisitions from Baden-Württemberg to elsewhere. And they're all in the business, of course, with the Russian Gazprom, because that's really lucrative and that's really very directly lucrative. So and that's a big problem in Germany as well. But in the intensity of corporate control, especially on the national level, Germany only has a few assets. Like in Volkswagen, the 20% is also on the Landesebene. And on the federal state, it's not the national state, it's not Mrs. Merkel, but one of her governors who owns this 20%. And Mrs. Merkel in that way, or not she personally, but she obviously has also via the state bank. I'm actually in favor of one state bank to do development and SME finance. That's completely fine. But also that's the holding company for other industrial assets. And then you see, for example, that Airbus, which is the biggest with Boeing together, the number one and two of the global airline manufacturing industry and a huge defense manufacturer as well, is owned 10% by the German state, 10% by the French state. And so all these decisions are also totally politicized. There's no doubt about it. And this is has led to a lot of wrong decisions in procurement and a lot of complicated conflicts with our American friends in the tariffs and so on and so on. And that's all a bit, I think, something we could now use in the corona crisis really to rethink. Do we need such a level of state ownership in developed market economies? where we have capital markets. Yeah. France has a stock exchange. Yeah. These companies are already mostly, at least partially, stock exchange listed. To do additional equity on the stock exchange is not a complicated transaction. And who of the voters really care and know even if Airbus is 10% owned by the KfW and 10% by the French state? And if it's just 5%, who really will notice? Will there be a revolution in the streets of Paris or Berlin because there is the equity stake of the KfW will be reduced from, I think it's actually 7.9% to 3.5%? I don't think so. And it brings some billions for sure. And this is would be good to counter this debt, which we now go into trillions in all Europe to somehow stabilize the economy, which I actually support. It's good. But what should be the economic consequences out of this massive new debt issue? Obviously, make a stronger economy. What is the potential for a stronger economy? Less corrupt, less collusive, more competitive, less cartels, less kind of nepotism. Yes, privatize some of the state assets we have. In Western Europe, obviously, but also in Italy and Austria and Southern Europe, there's this big case of the Greek debt crisis, where they shoot up to 300% of GDP in of debt in the crisis after 2008. Then it was wisely decided to have a privatization fund, because also they have huge amount of state assets in everything, basically. Because the Southern European economies in the Cold War, they were like mixed economies. You know, of course, also in the competition with the labor movements and the socialist parties, privatization was impossible. And basically, the socialist parties were bought in the political consensus by not touching their famous oil company, railway companies. And so organized labor was basically satisfied with having this kind of state companies where they could monopolize the power and get their guys into the positions. And so then, of course, in the Greek financial crisis, there was then this privatization fund. It works a bit, but the problem of Europe is, again, this very segmented market size. So what it means that you cannot really expect that the Greek railway company is sold to Greek investors. Yeah? And then when we don't do it on a European level, that the Americans really are interested in it is doubtful, and that the Chinese are very interested is for sure. So what is much better to Europeanize this in a European infrastructure companies and then float it on the European level? Because I'm sure the international capital market would be quite interested to fund a European railway expansion and only partly float it on the European level and keep a European equity stake, but rationalize our minimal market sizes, which we have, especially in the geography, very complicated Central and Eastern Europe. I mean, building a railway in Greece or in the Balkans or is very little economic value and extremely expensive for the investment. Yeah. And even in Africa, they do now these fast-speed trains for 2063, the big project. I talked about it already. So we can really Europeanize the railway, highway, energy sectors, and then maybe build some consensus later to privatize partly also these companies. So what I said, yeah, the point is also in Eastern Europe, you know, the history of Eastern Europe is, of course, been different. Until 1919, everything was state-owned, at least every big thing, every big company. There was some different models in some of the countries, where in some countries land ownership was allowed and small business was allowed. But all the big companies, obviously, were in the state hand. And then it depends very much on the tradition and the political situation in each country. Some countries really went a good way to privatize the main state assets reasonable, not only in collusive, terrible way, but really get rid of it, sell it on a market basis. And there was some good success with privatization in some countries. Some countries have kept a huge level of state ownership. Slovenia, Croatia, Romania, all very negative examples. Also the Czech Republic, huge amounts of the economy still today owned by the state. Most famously, this big nuclear company, CES, but also there in Romania. And then, of course, you know, you have all these wonderful opportunities. Again, I repeat, yeah, it makes it a fantastic opportunity. If you're prime minister and you need to fund your party, then you just call the 10 biggest managers which you have appointed. It's all your friends. They know exactly why they are the manager of the INA in Croatia or the MOL in Hungary. They know exactly that it's not their competence. Obviously, they have to know their business and they have to be decent. But there's a lot of people who know the energy sector or who know the railway sector. And there's only one who is the CEO. Why he became the CEO? Because he was the best railway manager or the best energy manager? No. Because he was the best friend of Mr. Orban or Mr. Senada. You might remember this prime minister who fell over this very deep-rooted corruption system, especially in the state-owned sector and the party funding. Some of them fall because they lose the inner cohesion of the network, basically. It's not the justice system which brings them down, because they also control the justice system very much so. But it brings them down if they lose the trust of the inner circles, or there is a competitive situation with their party boards or with their key group, or they lose the trust of some outside power which maybe doesn't think they are basically overreaching in their own network, and then they lose the insider trust, and then they get sacrificed. Because normally it works like this, that these collusive networks protect each other, because it works quite well for everybody, not for the taxpayers, not for the broader public, but for all the insiders. So they keep a cohesive level, and they protect each other. And so basically that's the idea. And then in Eastern Europe, some countries have a much better result, because the Baltic countries, they privatized much more. Also Poland has privatized a lot, yeah. Czech Republic less, Slovakia has privatized a lot. So it's very different in each country. Bulgaria seems to be a case, some say state capture, Romania state capture, and that's obviously the situation when it's such a big area of state influence that you control it. And the other aspect I want to explain in small economies, and that's the situation in Europe, that's our tragedy in a way, that's why we need the European Union so much, yeah? Is that in a small economy where you have basically like in this area between whatever, 500,000 people to 10 million people, which most of our European member states are, then it's quite easy to control the most important companies, because you are simply friend with everybody, everybody who matters. Yeah. And this is basically your personal friend network. You can control it in one afternoon. You can go through the city, you know the most important companies, you meet the CEOs at dinners, you are related with each other. It's simply like this, and there is no real, without the EU, there is no competition, there is a lot of collusion and attached political corruption. And then obviously also tragic things happen, like when there is a whistleblower, then the whole system is shaking, and if it's wild and there is no mechanism, then even you have this ultimately... even murders, political sponsored murders in Europe, like in Malta, like in Slovakia, like in Bulgaria. And this is, of course, a tragedy, because, again, we don't have the European institution, like a European FBI, like a European level of justice, which is really able to enter into this kind of collusive, corruptive network on the member states level and have the authority to investigate independently and outside of this related relation networks, the political nepotism networks, which are, unfortunately, everywhere very strong, especially in this kind of nexus between this big, huge state sector and inherited from the past in areas of, like I've mentioned, defense, airports, yes. And this is all the history of European reality. It's not that Europe is bad, you know, and don't get me wrong, it's not the European Union level. European Union has a certain, they called it neutrality towards the status of the ownership, yeah. That's necessary, because otherwise all the, who are the decision maker in Europe, in the European Union? It's the member states and the politicians sent from them. So they would not want the EU to have the power to end these collusive networks. What of course EU has as powers is the anti-monopoly, anti-state subsidy, and anti-cartel powers of the DG competition. And also it has these powers to liberalize markets. And that's actually our success story, because liberalization was really from the various markets to transport to energy is basically allowing on enforcing competition that these actors, when they are state-owned, they have to behave like market actors. They don't get privileges by the state, mostly. But informally, yes, they get very much. But mostly, no. And that was the EU has done so successfully. So it's a constant struggle between the collusive, corruptive networks around the member states' power centers, with the European level trying to bring corporate governance rules, liberalization, everybody, no subsidies from Paris to the state companies, which are not approved by Brussels, and no unfair competition by subsidizing your own companies or giving them some additional benefits, because otherwise the bigger states would fund their bigger companies, their state-owned companies, so much that smaller private sector would be crowded out, but also smaller state-owned companies would be crowded out in the internal market. And that's something we have established relatively well, actually. That's one of the big successes of the internal market, that at least this now 27 state corporate giants and their networks have to compete among each other, because they're all in the same business of energy, transport, digital, and telecoms, finances, and everything. So when you ask me what is the most important topic to really clean up the European economy, lift the next level of prosperity in Europe, reach North American prosperity levels, and also clean up this mess we have, unfortunately, I think, and then, and also pay back some of the debts we issue now, not only the 750 on the EU level, but also the member states. It's about 4 trillion is the estimation which all member states together with the EU are issuing in new debts. And the state companies in Europe, according to the latest OECD report I read, is 2 trillion of asset value and company value. That's at least we can do something to reduce this level. And it would also, even more important than repaying debt and debt with the equity, we have the opportunity now in this crisis to rationalize and release this potential which is holding us back. I think this kind of huge corporate behemoths owned by the member states, to disentangle them, privatize what is reasonable to be privatized, and also maybe Europeanize what is reasonable to be Europeanized, and grow much better in the next decade, because we have a better, more open, less corrupt, less collusive, more competitive economic sector in these key infrastructure sectors, and we have less kind of state-sponsored collusion and corruption in Europe. And also our politicians have more time to focus on politics and less focus on the corporate interests they also represent. They have then time to represent all businesses, which no matter what the ownership, not only favor their state-owned energy giants or infrastructure giants. And we also have maybe better performance of these companies, because it's no longer the friend of the prime minister being a manager, but somebody who is really competent and who made the way up because he has the trust of all shareholders. So wouldn't that be wonderful? I think that's something we really should do, and we really have a great opportunity ahead, and much better and much fairer and much freer and much more successful Europe. And the same logic is true, by the way, for Ukraine. The same logic is true for all African, Asian, for China, to a lesser extent for the freer economies of the US, but also in the US, and there are state companies. Take a look, and on the internet, it's all there under state-owned companies worldwide. And check out what kind of company there is in your country, and make sure that they should be at least partially privatized, and that would be much more better for everybody and for the whole world. I think so. So privatization is back again. Please privatize, and I think it will be a much freer, fairer, and better world with more private assets and less state capture and less collusion, less corruption. Thanks a lot.